Now I take you on a positive journey. The image of God given us by Jesus shows God as the Creator giving himself to creation in a pouring out of love. That was his concept. That's the words that generated the energy of Jesus of Nazareth. Creation is the love that is poured out. God is pouring, giving himself, and creation is the gift. God is an object of, as an object of thought, is necessarily outside and separate, transcendent, beyond everything we can see. Genuine knowledge of God can only happen in the communion we call love. It's only in love that we can connect with what Teilhard de Chardin, to me it's the best one-liner that I know, God is the heart and the beyond of everything. So when you connect with, if you miss the heart, meaning the centre, the core, the inner reality, if I'm talking to you and I'm nowhere near that, well, I'm nowhere near it. But the closer I get to you in love, any one person, any group, the closer I get to you in love, the more I will be in touch with what transcends you and me, the mystery we call God. So now I'm going to talk to you about love. God bless you. Now, what is love? I daren't ask the question, but I have asked it. So here's my best effort at some words to touch on it. Love, this is a quote from my book called Yielding to Love, which I've got down the back there should you want to purchase it. Love is being part of something that is other than myself. Please excuse the poverty of my words, but in such a way that I become more fully my own distinct self in being in love. If I'm part of you, but in being part of you, I gradually vanish, or am submerged, or don't mature, or find myself put down, or don't grow, are you with me? Then it's not love that's happening. It's something you need to break because it's actually destructive. So it is being part of something other than myself, but in it I grow. I become more distinctly me and not you. We're not... Love is not a melding into an obscure oneness in which distinctions are lost. Maybe on the honeymoon, okay. But a week after the honeymoon, I think you need to do something about who you really are. And when you discover his or her mannerisms that you didn't know about earlier, you probably hit reality fairly hard. Anyhow, I'm not into honeymoons. You are, or have been, or want to be, or whatever. But so the more love is pure, the more each of us is enabled to emerge in our precise difference. And you must want the one you love to be different, to be his or herself, in a, of course, and then that person will really feel loved by you, of course, and it's a mutual. The more we do this, the more profound and fulfilling the love communion that is given and received. Nothing is at rest. Everything's becoming. Love is an experience of our interconnection, our communion with everything else that is also becoming. And what are we becoming? Our goal is not a loss of our unique self and our personality. On the contrary, it's a full owning of oneself, but in communion, not in isolation. We're not individuals, we're persons. Individualism is a modern stupidity, because I'm actually a person, and that's how I began. I began stuck on my mother's placenta, and not too long after I was born, a few minutes, I was stuck on a breast, and we're into communion, and then I was stuck with siblings and mum and dad, and now, God help me, it's you lot. Like we're always in relationship That's who we are as persons. Love is the experience of that creative energy that impels us to grow and to grow in communion with everything that is. I might share with you, now that it flips into my mind, one of my very rare, but anyhow it was, a kind of mystical experience that I had when I was about 20. In fact, I was 19, I think, in the seminary. And this experience has actually formed my soul, I'd have to say. You know, some experiences do actually form you. Anyhow, I was reading a book in French by a man called... called La Participation selon Saint Thomas. Participation according to Saint Thomas. Geiger, G-I-E-G-E-R, probably German in here. I was reading it in French. And during all the classes I was reading, because I was enthralled with it and I wanted to understand why we're part of God but we're not God. What it means to participate in the being of God without being identical with God or separate from God. It's quite a massive concept, really, but a very fundamental one. And I was reading St. Thomas Aquinas' stuff about it, according to this interpreter. And anyhow, so I used to read in class under the desk, on my lap, whenever there was a boring lecture, which was mostly. When there was a very good lecture, I'd listen. When there wasn't, I'd keep one ear pricked just to keep up with things. But I didn't want to waste 40 minutes. And I think it was wise of me not to do that. You'd all be wise now to be reading a book, probably. Because you've got to fill in your life with something. So I was doing that. But I couldn't let the book go. And it was winter. I was at Croydon, looking out upon the Dandenong Mountains. But it was night. And I was out there on my own. And I'd been reading this and I was thinking about it. And I was underneath what people called a tulip tree. I think that's what it was called. Whether there is such a thing, I don't know. Okay. And it was winter, so it had lost all its leaves. And I was sitting there reading this, and I looked at the tree, and it was a starlit night, and I can only put it as simply as I can say it, I had a profound feeling of belonging to everything, which is such a grace. Like, I belong to everything. I belong to the tree. It was expressing my longing by its hands reaching up, the stars, the cold, the night, the world. And that was when I was 19 and I'm now 71 and I've never lost that truth, that I actually do belong to everything. And I can only see that as a profound gift. To know you belong to everything is a good start, isn't it? So, and there have been times when I've, you know, whatever, but I go back to that. So why did I tell you that, I suppose? Because that's what this is saying. It's that create. The more love is pure, the more each of us... Love is the experience of that creative energy that impels us to grow and to grow in communion with everything that is. Don't leave anything out. The other remains other, but an other to which and to whom we belong. So why would you fight them? Why would you hate them? Why would you do anything except reach out to them? And of course, Jesus did that. He got crucified. You might get crucified too. But why do anything else? Why let others create the tune that you're going to hum or beat the drum that you're going to walk to? This is because everything we experience is drawn towards the other in whose being we all participate. To love is to commit oneself to be with others as they continue to grow towards the fullness of their special individuality or personhood. Now, this is not possible without some degree of genuine self-love. And if I could speak as a priest now from 47 years of ministry, I think I could sum it up pretty well by saying the vast majority of people that I've had to talk to and do in confession and in my office and whatever else, the vast majority don't know how beautiful they are. They don't know how good they are. They're so aware of their defects, which are no doubt real, that it kind of tends to have a bad self-image or a low sense of who they are, or they've been hurt by parents and spouses and kids, and, you know, so hurt and so wounded, it's not difficult to lose this sense of who you are. And we need someone to love us enough to assure us, because we see other people better than they see. You see me actually better than I see myself. I think that's the way it works. And I think that's if you love me, I mean, if we're communing. And I think it's the same from me to you. So we need to believe those who love us when they tell us, without flattery or stupidity, who we really are. So Paul claims that the whole law is summed up in a single commandment: you shall love your neighbour as yourself. And if you don't, if I don't have a respect for myself, the mystery of who I am, we're getting close to God now, you know, if I don't respect that, that's going to get in the road of my helping you, isn't it? I won't see you, because I'll see you. I remember when I was a university chaplain at New South Wales, and I used to go down at night down to, if you know, Centennial Park. And later on I heard it's not a safe place to be going at night, but I didn't know that anyhow, so I'm there. But the ponds, there were plenty of ponds there. And when they were perfectly still, the pond, you could look into them and you could see the bats flying from ornamental fig trees and so on. You could see all this, and you could see the stars reflected in the still water. But when the wind was blowing, of course, you couldn't see anything. Everything's distorted. So I think if I, for example, came to you to ask, which could easily happen, ask your opinion on something, if inside you're all disturbed about your agenda, do you get me? Then you can't actually see me, so you can't actually help me. And maybe I'll discern that pretty quickly, and you'll discern it pretty quickly, and we'll decide I'll get help from someone else. But if you're still in here, in other words, you basically can forget your own agenda and your own person and your own hurts and your own... If you're at home with your real self, then you can be still. And when I come to talk to you, I will see myself in your eyes and in your responses, and I'll go away real, having come in with a knot. And a knot is only something you don't know where to start pulling to. You can't. It's too knotted because you're too confused. And it can be unlatched, or whatever the word is. So you shall love your neighbour as yourself. He was echoing Jesus, who said the same thing, who was himself drawing on a tradition found in the Hebrew Scriptures. So this is a basic human wisdom here. Loving oneself involves a recognition of the fact that whoever I am and whatever has happened to me, and we've all got our stories there, I am capable in some way and to some degree of receiving love, and am of offering my unique self in love to others. I can't offer you, I'm saying I, but you'll all read yourself when you use the word I can't offer you who I ought to be. I can't offer you who I would have been if I hadn't. I can't offer you who Mum and Dad would have liked me to be. I can't offer you who I was. I can't offer you who one day I might be. I can't offer you my ideal self. Are you following me? I can only offer you me. And if I've only got a little tiny inch of love left, because the rest has been dragged out of me and I'm just about desperate and whatever, and I'm in a total mess, so if I've only got that much love, well, I can give you that. But don't ask more of me. Don't pummel me and say you should be loving, more loving than you are, because that's just going to reduce that to half what it is. You're just, okay. So I can only give you myself. You can only give your real self to someone. But you can do that. To love is not to be so falsely full of ourselves that we think we can be independent and that we can use others to build up our own false ego. And our culture actually favours independence, I think. It's a pretty generalisation, but I think it's true. And I think that's why a lot of our culture is quite at home with atheism. It's an individualistic thing. And usually only those who are fortunate or got good health or successful in some way that can think of themselves as an individual, and that's why suffering sometimes brings us all a bit down to who we really are. To love, again I'm only using words that might echo, is to resist another temptation, which is to think that we can grow by holding others back to be part of ourselves. I'll only learn to love if I've got a good grip on you. I need you to be there for me to be able to be loving. That's not the way it works. I might want you there, and when you're there I may feel terrifically better, but somehow I have to find myself at a level that is deeper than needing you for me to be me. There's no place for this holding back. All the spiritual writers are about detachment, which doesn't mean don't get attached, but it means hold gently, and when love calls you to let something go, you let it go. Hard, life-giving, real. Others are part of us. Others do belong. But we must learn to respect others in their unique otherness, in their difference from ourselves. Codependency, which I presume you've got a bit of an idea of, codependency is not love. And it's rampant in communities, and we've all got a bit of it. But it's not love. So I cover for you. You're an alcoholic, and I'm living with you. And I play the game of pretense that you're not. Because I need, there's some need of mine being fulfilled by your being there. The thought of being alone is too fearsome, so I play along with the untruth. I'm dependent on you as much as you're dependent on me, and we're both dancing in a game that's not real. Codependency isn't love. We belong to each other because we're all involved in a journey of love, and we are meant to make the journey together, of course, energizing each other to become the unique person we're capable of being while sharing our uniqueness with each other. Love is not something we find. It's not something we fall into. We use the expression fall in love, and we all have a feeling of what that's like and hopefully a memory of it, a few memories of it probably. So falling in love is the word we express. It's not such a good term really for what's happening, except some of the psychologists that attract me in here say it is actually a falling. You're becoming an adult is a pretty difficult process, and teenager years and then post-teenage often. Falling in love psychologically, I'm not arguing this, but is it taking me back to the womb a bit, taking me back to childhood where everything's beautiful and where the connections are complete and where suddenly we're in heaven together with you. So there is and it's a good process probably. It takes away a lot of pressure and but it has to be somehow become real a bit down the track. So it's not something we fall into. It's something we create, love. We build it. When we recognize our belonging, when we delight in the other, we don't love the feeling of being in love, but we love you. I love you, not the feeling of loving you, which are quite obviously different. The mystery, delight in the other, we commit ourselves to respect the mystery of our own being by daring the journey into our own heart. That most difficult of journeys, the inner journey. While we journey into the heart of the world, and while we're with others in their becoming, we're not meant to be alone. We're meant to be in love with everything. When this commitment is mutual, love becomes that precious gift we call friendship. If you have one friend in the world, blessed are you. If you've got two, tell me your secret. Three, wow. Four, you know what I mean? I don't mean acquaintances, but I mean a friend I'm talking about is someone that you can actually say absolutely everything to without holding anything back and know that you're loved and respected. I hope you have one person. If you've got one, that's life-giving. That's enough. But if you've got more than one, that's marvellous. Good-o. Friendship is, at this level, is, I think, a bit rare. Who hasn't experienced the attraction of love? Now I'm getting close to my argument. The pain we experience when love is denied or taken away is itself a witness to our natural and radical sense that we're made for loving. We're made for loving. The slightest taste of true love engages this longing. That's us. That's who we are. Love isn't something we do, it's something we are. We're in the image of God. God is love. We're love. That's what we are. So the slightest taste of true love engages the longing, often in quite painful ways. We know that we're not meant to live in isolation. We're not self-contained. We're attracted outwards to ever more intimate communion with the world around us. And when we experience love, which is the word we use for this communion, we are attracted inward to plumb the depths of the inner world which love discloses. Now, experience. This may be true of you, I think it probably is. We sometimes find ourselves pursuing this attraction in ways that fail to make connection with the outer world. Others do this when they think they're loving us, but we know that they are not really connecting with us. They call it love, but it doesn't connect and it doesn't engage our longing. It's something else. It might be lust, it might be desire, it might be feeling good about me, but if it's love, it will engage this something else in me. If others are failing to connect, are we sure we're not failing in the same way? Learning to love really is a journey that takes all our life. It's a process of learning, and we can never learn enough, and we can never learn it fully. Now, is this true? We sometimes find ourselves pursuing this attraction for love in ways that fail to make connection with our inner world. We meet people who do a lot of loving things, who speak a lot of loving words. Yet we sense that they have little self-knowledge. They seem to be striving, but it's not coming from their heart. No blame here, no judgment, just that's how it feels, it experiences it. A little reflection alerts us to the truth that we too suffer from this. Failing to make connection with our inner world. Loving from habit, it's not really coming from our depths. A little reflection alerts us that we too are suffering from this. Learning to love, learning to connect heart to heart, and I think that might be a good way of talking about love, involves us in a life journey. Sometimes we connect with neither the outer nor the inner world. We're out of touch with ourselves and I'm out of touch with you. When this happens, we feel distracted, frustrated, out of touch, not to mention the hurt we can cause to others, however unwittingly, because we're not in touch. We're avoiding the inner journey in some way. But when we pursue this attraction in ways that do connect, we experience a sense of belonging, a feeling of being partially satisfied and in touch. This is love. And the intimacy of the love varies according to the significance to us of the communion we experience. Sometimes there may be people in your life for whom this is absolutely profound, and that's a soulmate, a love partnership that's quite central to everything you do, and that's a wonderful gift. Others, we have a love for them, but it's not at that same level because of a whole lot of hurried reasons. So not every love is going to be soul at its deepest, that's obvious. But it's connection heart to heart at whatever level is kind of real. Though love involves thoughts and feelings, love is not a thought and it's not a feeling. It's the experience of being actually in communion with our own reality and with the reality of the other. And we all know that feeling, I'm absolutely sure you do. We all know it. That's what it is. True love is anything but an escape into a world of fantasy. The truer our love, the more real and more complete our connection with ourselves and with the world around us. Though we fail in love, everyone does, we must continue to trust our longing for love. We fail in love because we've not been in touch with our own reality or with the reality of another. We mustn't let failure cause us to despair of discovering love. For we can learn from our failure, and the call to love is always there directing us towards the truth of who we are and the truth of the other. Experience teaches us that it's not always easy to stay in touch with our heart. This is especially so when the heart is hurting. And sadly, the hurting heart of teenagers, and they're very vulnerable people, wasn't happening in my time, but now they can quickly get into alcohol, and they're doing it rampantly. Girls, perhaps especially, which is all a bit new in the last 50 years. So, and isn't that part of the problem with putting up prices of all these drinks and whether it's working or not working? But drinking of alcoholic drink for teenagers is dreadful because it's a way of covering the hurt rather than speaking about it, talking about it, and learning who we are. It's an escape. And so are many other things that our culture indulges in. So we're tempted to fill our emptiness in ways that don't come from our heart. We can find ourselves driven by lust or pride or the felt need to exercise power over another. Hopeless stuff. Our need for security can lead us to want to control another rather than engage in the risk of loving. Because if you love, you're going to be totally vulnerable. We're tempted to use others in ways that are not sensitive to their hearts. We find ourselves breaking the glass to get at the wine. Our relationships may wear the mask of love, but that's what it is. It's a mask. Our hearts, our deepest selves, where we experience a profound yearning to love and be loved, are not engaged. We're living in an unreal world. So, to conclude this first part, and I'm going to carry it on after the break to get to where this is all going, I focused on our common human experience simply to demonstrate why it is, or I've hoped to demonstrate it. I have to my own satisfaction. It's up to you to see whether it's satisfying. Why it is that love and our yearning for it generates our primary energy for living. If we understand this, that is the élan vital, that's the Bergson's driving force, eros, desire, to be in communion with you, with her, with him, with the world, with God, we'll come to. If we understand this, we'll be encouraged to be more creative in our loving, more committed to purifying the springs of our yearning. And that's the inner work. So that it isn't lust that's driving me, it's admiration of you and longing to be in communion with you in your terms. More committed to purifying the springs of our yearning so that we'll learn to love, as Jesus said, with all your heart, all your heart, all your mind, we're working on that pretty heavily this morning, all your soul, your inner longing and yearning, and all your strength.